This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Yohan. It's been said that Malaysia is a democracy, that the people have the power. But when we look at our political landscape today, it seems like the voters, the rakyat, you know, don't actually have a say in the goings-on. In fact, the political manoeuvring and durian trading that's allegedly currently ongoing is in complete contradiction with what the people want, which is complete focus on curbing the pandemic and restarting the economy. But how does this happen? And is there a way to bridge the gap between the people and the government or the state or just politicians in general? Joining me on the show today to discuss this is Sharon Raj of Parti Socialist Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Sharon. How are you doing?
Hi, Dashrin. Nice to be back on the show again. Thanks for inviting me.
You know, I brought it up in my introduction, and so the question is, how does this happen, right? If democracy is all about, you know, the people's power, then how can something, for example, like Lanka Sheraton, happen without the members of parliament or MPs consulting the rakyat or involving the rakyat in any way, shape or form?
Firstly, we will have to need to look back into history. How do we get here? Because this is not actually an individual trigger. This is actually a systematic issue. Okay, and unknown to many, actually, the British actually has a lot of things to play in Lanka Sheraton. But I'm not saying a CIA kind of coup. But I'm saying they have to take more to equal to the blame. Entire global history. When we look at democracy, it was not given voluntarily by any people in power, any status quo, any minority, any feudal lords, any colonizer. It was actually fought hard. And that same thing actually happened to Malaya, including Sabah and Sarawak as well. Okay, they also had a vibrant fight for democracy after World War II, just before the independence. And most of it was led by the socialists as well as the progressive front. But at the same time, when you look at the old power, some what we call the Malay aristocrats, the Bangsawan, the Ketua Kampung, and all of that. Of course, Ketua Kampung today is a very different kind of game. So these guys were very much in line with the British, okay? And they do not really favor democracy because any form of democracy was actually threatening their power, their hold, and their financial interests, for that matter, in landlords and matters. And what happened was that the British reluctantly gave us a one form of democracy, and they gave us the crudest form of democracy, which is the first past post system. Okay. Right. It was designed from day one because it was actually an indirect version of Magna Carta. And when you look at Magna Carta of the United Kingdom in the 1200s, it was actually meant to keep a certain feudal lords in power. It was meant to dilute the power of the monarchs, but it was never meant to give the power to the people.
Right.
Okay. And when you come back here to Malaysia, when we're still practicing that, this is exactly what we get. We get gerrymandering, we get power trading and this and that. And when people are saying, oh, look at all our election, it was rigged and that, and it was mostly done by Mahathir. Actually, Mahathir was not the father of election rigging. It was actually Tunku Abdul Rahman. And it was actually done with the blessings of the British themselves. The British, like I mentioned, they were very reluctant to hand over the political power to the progressive, to the socialists and so on. They would rather have the old power, the old feudal lords to actually run the country because it protects their business interests, which is the mining, the estates, post-independence. Okay, so that is where you get a group of, you look at the entire UMNO, after independence, were all led by the aristocrats, all the old lords and feudal lords and so on. And they, until today, it's still them, you know. It is the same people, it is same, the Razak family lineage. Whether you talk about Tengku Zafrul, whether you talk about Tengku Razali, whether you talk about Mahathir and all of that, you talk about Tun Abdullah. One way or other, all of them actually had some sort of patriarchal or parent or uncle or some sort of family lineage which brought them into politics. Okay, and they have closed the entire top leadership to themselves. But it's not exclusive to Malays. You will have it also in Indians. It's MIC. And same goes to MCA. It, across the board, is like that. After multiple generations, it is still them. Their interests were never really reflected the people from day one. And it's still them who's dominating it. Okay? And the election has been rigged in such a way from day one, it benefits them. And I'll just take an example from it was 1964 election year, where the Alliance Party, which is Pradi Center Subarisan, had 52% of the vote, but they had 72% of their seat, you know. And when you look at the Progressive Fund, they had nearly half the vote, but they had only 28% of the seat in parliament. Sounds familiar. This is exactly what happened in 2013 election. And any attempt when the feudal lords or the old power, we call it, when they tried to lose election, they actually went against to finishing off the opposition. One of the ones that brutally got hit was the Socialist Front. Okay? So they are our super predecessor for PSM. So they were thrown into ISA and stuff. And then the Progressive Fund also, they have suffered immensely. They were not surrendered, given a chance for political power in 1969 also. Okay? And all of this, when you look, it is actually by design. Our election system, our democracy, which is in the crudest form of it, does not really meant to protect the interests of the people. It was meant to protect the interests of the feudal lords, the aristocrats, and British has left it on that way. And ever since then until today, it was not actually been reformed properly. We had an opportunity in the 1969 election where the people were really got so fed up with Alliance Party, or also to this, or Barisan. So that time it was Parti Perikatan. So our old Parti Perikatan at that time, the Lions Party, they were so reluctant to hand over the power once they lost 2/3 and they lost several states. Yes, they had majority in parliament, but they lost 2/3 and they lost state. And surrendering state power to the Progressive Front or to any of the socialists for that matters, will actually lead them to nationalize these lands and mines, which indirectly threatens the old power as well as the British. So, which is why when UMNO refused to surrender power, the entire politicking happens, which we know May 13. Of course, now May 13 is called as a racial riot, but it was actually a riot where the upper ruling people, the old power, refused to surrender power and they decided to trigger a kind of riot. And when you look in the 1969 election also, there was a huge campaign by the Progressive Front against the elites, the cronyism, the corruption, the kayangan. Although the 69 election was lost, Alliance or Tunku Abdul Rahman was very reluctant. And of course, we Razak engineered the whole other forceful political alliances with the Progressive Front, forming what we know as Barisan National. The Alliance Party was so unpopular, they decided to take all the popular things, popular words, things like the Red Book, land reform. And in a way, it was also good because all the progressive and the socialist idea, land reform, things we know like Felda, Felkra, universal healthcare. Okay, we had clinic based. We had what we call as universal free primary education. We had SPB. All of these was actually a socialist policy. Today, when you talk about MARA, MRSM, these were actually socialist policy adapted, which is good. Portable tap water, democratization of electricity, rural infrastructure. But the biggest mistake the Progressive Front did at that point of time was not doing the democratic reform. Reducing the voting age to 18 years, changing the first-past post system to proportional representation, de-rigging the election system. All of that did not happen. Okay, and over time, they actually become very submissive to their political leaders. And now when you come back to what happened in Lanka Sharatan, it was not much of a difference. A lot of people in Pakatan Harapan had not actually adhered to the warning that was given by PSN. We told, do not work with the old power, do not work with Bersatu, do not work with Mahathir and Muhyiddin. They are not interested in reforms, they are not interested in progressive. And what was happening, if you look the war between Mahathir and Najib before election, it was another war between Pembesah. If you read the old Malay history, it was two Pembesah fighting who gets to control the river to collect taxes. It was similar to do this. And in 69, it happened same, except it was Ong Jaffa versus Abdul Rahman. Now it's Mahathir versus Najib. And who became the tiebreaker in both this election was the Progressive Front. Of course, the Progressive Front in 2018 was Pakatan Harapan. Mm-hmm. And it was actually Pakatan Harapan who actually put Mahathir into Putrajaya. It was not the other way around. Okay, Mahathir did not bring the vote. He did not have the clout that he think he had. He actually ride on the anti-Barisan sentiment. And when you look at anti-Barisan sentiment before election, people were actually against the kayangan, the feudalism, the aristocrat power, people like cronyism, corruption. They were very clear about what they were fighting. But it was not known that they were fighting the similar old power after 50 years. Because in Malaysia, you don't have surname like Kennedy, Bush and stuff. So you don't know you're fighting the same lineage again. So last time was our grandparents. Today it's actually the grandchildren's fighting, but it was still the same class hierarchy. And when Pakatan got into power in the 22 months, they did not push the fundamental thing was a democratic reform. And when you see what happens to them was actually all of the things they did not reform. Police abuse. People are asking for mass vaccination, but what people are getting is mass investigation, where you investigate so many MPs, so many people turn up for Lawan. When you look at the abuse of speaker power, you look at the abuse of the executive power, all of this, they had an opportunity to reform, which they did not. And all of that later led to Lanka Sheraton. And when you saw that how democracy was not being respected. So history actually repeated itself for the second time with almost the near same players.
So, Sharon, then you brought the historical context, you know, about how this is history repeating itself, missed opportunities. Let's zoom in on bridging that gap, right? Because when we look at the events of Lanka Sheraton, it seemingly caught everyone by surprise, right? When we talk about, it may not have caught people from PSM by surprise because y'all were ringing the alarm bells, but it caught the majority of the rakyat by surprise. And half the country was incredibly angry. Most people thought that it was a case of, you know, quote unquote cheating or betrayal. You know, how can this happen? People ask, we voted for Pakatan Harapan, but now it's a completely different government. You know, things like that. But is this the fault of the powers that be, or is it the fault of the people for our lack of understanding? Because an argument can be made, right, that Lanka Sheraton is what happens in many mature democracies like Germany or like the UK. It happens all the time. And because like the first-past-the-post system, we are not actually voting for a particular party, or we are not voting for a particular prime minister, although the people may think so, but in reality, that's not what it is. We are voting for individuals, and who they choose to team up after that, after we vote for them, it's technically, by constitution, up to them.
Okay, we will have to make that caveat. PSM was actually taken by surprise. We know Sheraton, something like Sheraton was supposed to happen, but we did not know it happened in 22 months. We did not know Mahathir will start bringing back the old power into Putrajaya in that very fast. So that took us by surprise, but we will know it was actually bound to happen, one way or other to happen. Now, when we look at talking about mature democracy first, UK is not really any form of mature democracy. Their political bickering is actually as bad as us. For that extent, even Australia. Of course, they are also a wealthy country. We are also a wealthy country. So today, this first-past-post system, which is meant to keep only the certain old powers or feudal lords, is also, to a certain extent, happened in UK and in Australia. But what changed things a bit is the people's involvement in politics through direct democracy. One of it is also demonstration. Demonstration is a form of direct democracy. That is why the word democracy and demonstration, they're actually very close because they are from the Greek word, right? And they had made a lot of reforms. And when you look from the times of Magna Carta, when the barons took the power from absolute monarch until today, there's time to time has been a lot of protests, a lot of public pressure, a lot of calling for democratic reform, which have happened, okay? And unfortunately for Malaysia, we have missed that opportunity in 1969 when the progressing force went into coalition with the alliance forming Barisan. They never took it up. And it has same also, we can say, when Pakatan Harapan worked with Bersatu, but they did not actually took that opportunity to reform that advocate. And all this missed opportunity actually is the very reason we have. But when you look in the case of for Germany, which do not practice first-past-post system, they had a huge amount of political uprising over in the late during the 70s, okay? And this was the case throughout the entire Western Europe, okay? Because at that point of the post-World War II, there was a lot of dictatorship, there was a lot of authoritarian in the European countries, okay? And US actually preferred to back them because the option was either a authoritarian dictator or your option was a communist party. And of course, at the height of the Cold War, countries like France or anything that's going into there, into a communist or socialist kind of revolution of any sort was definitely a no-go, right? But that created a lot of democratic protests in the 70s, which later led to democratic reform and forming the Europe free world that we know today, which is democratic, which is the matured version of liberal, and which Germany was also part of that, but unfortunately, the UK did not really went to that kind of large-scale democracy. Yes, they have control, lobbying power and stuff. They're definitely better than Malaysia, but they're not as equally good as to European countries, to a certain extent, Central European or Western European countries. Okay, and when you look at any country that still practice first-past, post-the system, whether you talk a lot of states in United States, or you talk about UK, you talk about Australia, you talk about India, Pakistan, what we have is actually happening there also, because it is the system. And when you talk about the system, you do not expect things to change if you don't change the mold, you know. Okay, because the mold is similar. So regardless whatever liquid or jelly you put in, the mold will come out as round as round. So you need to change your mold. Okay, and that changing of the mold cannot happen from within the system. It must come from external of the system, which is where people power has to come. So when you see all this mature democracy, it was not happened by the politicians themselves or by the right wing or by the old power. The people themselves actually hammered the mold. They made the change. They democratized the power. They seized the political power, which forming all the liberal modern democracy that we know as in today.
Okay, so you brought up COVID, and that's interesting. But I'm also thinking, like, okay, even without COVID, right, how fast could this mobilization, organization take place? As a country, is Malaysia, you know, as a people, are we very politically conscious? Because like you brought up, in a lot of mature democracies, it really took a lot of hard work to get there. People really had to push back, had to fight. And it's not the politicians that matured the democracy, it's the people themselves. But when you look at Malaysian politics, something else I've noticed is, for example, many people don't even understand the job of an MP or an ADUN. You know, I talked to some personal friends. Like, people don't know what a job of an MP is, what a job of an ADUN is. A lot of people seem to evaluate how good an MP is, for example, by how often they turun padang and hand out, you know, food aid or something like that, right? This is even before the COVID pandemic and you know, how often the MP is coming down to look at the longkang problem, the longkang kotip sampah and all these kinds of stuff, right? Is this a problem, this lack of understanding? How and what can we do about it?
Okay. First of all, when we look at today people being apolitical, it did not happen overnight. When you look at the situation before 80s, for that matters, before 80s in the 60s and 70s, political consciousness was actually quite high and considerably very high even by today's standard with social media and so on. Okay, this was because people realized everything part of parcel of their life is actually determined by politics, whether the price of your rice, whether there's a pothole in your road, whether potable water, tap water, all of this is actually determined by politics, okay, and you cannot actually stay away. And but what happens was, this one was largely happened because of AUKUS. When the students actually always, in every society, any modern democracy society, the students, the young people, will remain the forerunner, the torchbearer of all democracy movement. And this happens also in Malaysia. When you look in the 40s, the people in the age of 20s, the students, they were the forerunner, the torchbearer of pushing for democracy in Malaysia, for diluting powers from the old power. Okay, so of course, people can call them the youth power, the young power, but they are actually the people's power. Okay. But when AUKU came into the process, you had this narrative that you are too young to talk politics.
For those who don't know, what exactly is AUKU?
Okay. AUKU is Aksa University and College University. It was introduced in 1971 by then Minister Dr. Mahathir. Okay, and it was meant to curtail student activism and students' participation in politics. It was meant to pacify nature. Until today, it's still there, giving a chilling effect, which is why Malaysian students... activism and democracy is actually at the weakest point in entire our history, although they had played a huge role in anti-colonial movement. Yeah? Now, and this AUKU has also pushed this narrative that you're too young to be involved in politics, belajar dulu, jangan terlibat dalam things. So all of this was there. And it's not only exclusive to the Malay community, it went across the board. Maybe, Dashan, when you are young, you would have heard it also. Your parents said, don't talk politics.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right, Sharon? We hear this all the time, and we assume I'm lucky because my dad was very, very much into current affairs. But when I go to school and I see a lot of my friends, that's the mindset that people have, and that's what their parents tell them, that's what the teachers teach, you know, don't talk about politics, don't get involved, you know, we are students, that politics is all, you know, for adults, and, you know, it's complex and you won't get it, and it's not important. That is also something they keep saying, not important. It's not important. Just focus on your studies.
Yes, because when you see, when you prolong toll an entire generation from the 70s until now for 50 over years, it became the mainstream narrative and they did not even know where it came from. Okay, and what happens because of that, you had political isolation, detachment. Even a lot of people say, oh no, I'm not interested in politics, I don't want to get... No, you. It's not. It doesn't matter if you're interested or not, it will impact you. And then you had this notion coming up, but this will be very common in among the Tamil community. They said, okay, as long as you raise your children properly, the society will do well. Not necessarily. You can raise your kid well and you can still have water cut. You can raise your kid well and your gardenia bread price will still go up. No problem. Nothing will change. Okay?
Right.
So, and this is where when Marxism actually says that every individual, every family is not a isolated unit of the society. Whatever happens in the society will actually impact you. So this is what we call the externalities. Okay? And you can run away from externalities, but externality will still hold on to you like it's a baggage. It will be tied to you. And the only thing you can do about it is actually change the externality, not run away from it. Okay? But this prolonged period of this was actually pushed by Aku. And when Dr. Mahathir actually became the prime minister, he was a master of this mind, perang saraf, of manipulating minds and everything so on. Okay, so he strengthened the UMNO hegemony and so on, which is where you get the title of Bapa Kemerdekaan, Kemajuan and everything. And then things like Wawasan Dokro Loko, giving them people in a delusion, false impression that politician knows better. And people became very much resided to their own family house about making money and stuff. And over a period of time, this has actually transversed across the generation. And after 50 years, this has become a mainstream narrative today. And when you ask people where it started, they don't know. Somebody told to them. You ask who told them, somebody to somebody to somebody.
Yes.
And it actually started from Aku, and it was lectured in the university. And onwards from them, it came today. It have detached. Maybe your parents would have been one of the very few who have escaped that mentality. But my family personally, not one of them actually in politics. And when you talk about politics or anything, this is what I get. And of course, I took the liberty and time to actually see what exactly actually happened. And you can trace back to the 70s. So that, and that has become the social today. And to make matters worse, the UMNO hegemony, which was pushed largely by of course, it was strengthened by Dr. Mahathir, it have changed our social fabric. It does not reflect the first past post the system when you talk about why MPs giving out rice bag and everything. It does not meant to reflect the our social fabric. You look at the parliament. It does not have a vast majority of our society classes. You don't have a student there. You don't have, say, a media worker is not there. But in Malaysia, there's about 30,000 media personnel workers, but they're not represented there.
Right.
There's about 60 over thousands supporting staff, non-medical support staff in public hospital, like hospital cleaners, you have gardeners, you have suppliers, and all of these people are not reflected there. There are about a million over students. They are not reflected there. Okay, but what you have there is some bunch of political elites who are from what we call Kayangan today, was actually a descendant of the old power. And when you look at the first past post the system, it rewards a winner's take it all kind of system. You just need a certain amount of vote for you to win. Okay, and the rest of the vote is discarded. And you can win this election by racism, fanatism, right-wing populism, welfareism. Okay, go and look after the longkang, xenophobia, rhetorics. And this is also not unique to Malaysia. You can actually see it in Australia. You can look at UK, the UK Independent Party, the Brexit. Brexit was a form of xenophobia. If you followed Boris Johnson closely, he was talking more anti-immigration, very quite strongly. Right. Yeah? Right? And Brexit was... And the ironic part when it comes to first past post the system in UK is that the world's biggest colonizer was talking about independence. Yeah.
Yeah.
And come back here to Malaysia. You talk have so much of this rhetorical going around, okay? And without reforming our democratic system to reflect our social fabric, okay? And social fabric is not ethnic based. Of course, today, Mahathir has strengthened the ethnic identity. This is very different in the 60s and 70s when you look at social fabric is based on your community. And social fabric means your needs for you to survive in a society. Talk about single mother. You talk about lorry drivers. And all of these are not actually captured in a society. And their idea is not mainstream. And what happens, you get a bunch of elitists coming up to the parliament who had no clue. I mean, there's very high chance. You ask the parliament what's the price of a rice bag. Super tempatan 5%. There's a very high chance they won't know because I don't think they went to the grocery store.
On the show with me today is Sharon Raj of Parti Socialist Malaysia. After the break, I'll be asking him about what a socialist would recommend when it comes to bridging the gap between the people and the political powers that be. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Sharon Raj of Parti Socialist Malaysia. And we're chatting about how we can bridge the gap between the people and the government, or just the political powers that be in general. So, Sharon, people's understanding, right, Sharon, of you know, power to the people in Malaysia today, I'm talking about, you know, wide scale, the rakyat, is that, you know, they get to vote once every 5 years. And, you know, you will ask a lot of people, and this is important, right? Going out to vote is important. Celebrating the first time you vote is important. The last elections was the first time I voted. It felt, you know, it felt really special. But people have this idea that that is what democracy is. Like, once every 5 years, I go and vote. Or if it's my first time voting, oh, I must give myself a clap and, you know, celebrate. And I did like this, something really, really amazing, right? I voted. And that's what democracy is all about. But is that what a mature and thriving democracy looks like, where people feel disenfranchised and they don't know what to do and they don't understand politics, but then once in 5 years, they go and vote?
This is where we talk. Look in Marxism. Marxism, I should talk about. This is a form of indirect democracy where you actually outsource your political power. So what our election has become today is like a subcontractor system. You choose which contractor gets to run the government. Because when you look at all the public protests happening today, it's actually against the government which they had voted. Okay, and this is where we also say, when you talk about power to people, it's not really there. It's actually still in the crudest form, and it was meant to keep the old power in position, and they do not speak for the people, doesn't represent for the people. Election is indirect form of democracy, okay? And then when you talk about, you need to talk about direct democracy. Okay, this is where you talk about demonstration, okay? So demonstration, you talk about workers' council, you talk about residence council, you talk about ketua kampung, local council. So elections at all the level needs to be done. But what's happening now in Malaysia is you appoint your adun, who appoints an MB by right. But when you look at it now, the MB in power or the party chief in power actually decide who gets the adun seat. You know? So it's not adun decide MP, it's the MB decides adun. And when you go to the top, it's the same. When in the Barisan's time, during the last election, Najib actually decides who gets to become the member of parliament, not the member of parliament decides Najib becomes prime minister. So it becomes that kind of patronage politics. And what happens later, you appoint your own ketua kampung from UMNO, from PAS, and so on. And the whole patronage system is there. And this locks out everybody. Okay, so when people talk about why PSM is arguing for local council election, why we're arguing for ketua kampung election, PSM even argue for ketua raja election. So elections, all position has to go for an election.
Right.
But what form of election it takes depends on the social fabric. So on a federal level, the proportional representation matters. Because when you look at Malaysians, we vote not for individuals. We actually vote for the policies that a particular party or group of people, for that matters, that pushes it. And sometimes it is linked to ideology, whether it's liberal, socialism, pluralism, regardless. Or you want to talk about the conservative value, Islam. There are people in Malaysia who want Islamic values and that, and they should be given right to be represented.
That's
as
right.
A pluralistic society, diversity must be captured in the parliament. I am not saying that there should not be any form of theology in the parliament, but if that is what people want, we should make way for it. It is not for the politicians to decide who is who. Okay? And when you say, okay, when we talk about, say, a ketua class election, okay, let people them go by majority first past post the system. And I'd like to give an analogy why election is actually very important. This is an experience when my scholar renda time, okay? So there is this two guys, one guy who always do keep his class tidy, neat, he will organize his friend, they will put up the hiasan during Merdeka and stuff. So quite a hardworking guy, okay? And then there's another guy, he's you can say he's also a bit of kayangan, okay? He's the pengawas of school, he cuts his hair nice, sit in the front desk, always get the number one in the class and everything. So it's well like, so when the next darja from standard 4, you went to standard 5, the teacher actually didn't give the student the opportunity to choose their own ketua darja. If they did, they would have actually chose this guy who sits at the back of the bench in the class, but he was the most liked, diplomatic, everybody. But he didn't. They went and choose the student from the front, the number one student, yeah? And so this bugger doesn't actually hold the penyapu, you know? He doesn't even hold the panyapu. He doesn't stay back to tidy up the class and everything. But he's the Kato class. Okay?
Right.
So this is a form of patronage. And you think patronage only happens in Putrajaya. No, it happens even in school Kato Darja also. Okay? And the democratic value needs to be installed from ground up. Everybody needs to know that a person representing a community, a society, the social fabric must actually represent them. They must have a voice. Okay? And the day that you did not do that, patronage will thrive. And to make matters worse, direct democracy, like demonstration, consultation, participatory democracy, all of that does not happen. And when that does not happen, you get a lot of policy which contradicts the people, and you have a lot of mismatch. You have projects which are not meant for the people, it's meant for the cronies. And that's where you see resistance, public protest, approval of very polluting industries, and all these kinds of et cetera.
You know, most of my friends, as we've talked about, you know, cousins and all that, they say, you know, politics is boring, it's annoying. You said that, you know, this is by design, right? Over the years, there's so many, like AUKU is one of them, but many different aspects to the way our democracy is run that a lot of people, you know, let's say they were born in the 90s or the 2000s, early 2000s and all, they just accepted that politics being boring and so detached from themselves, you know, it's like this elite political stuff and nothing to do with them and all. And they just accept it as their reality. Does this mindset benefit the powers that be?
Yes. To give you a first straight answer, is definitely a yes. So this is a part of parcel of a capitalistic society as analyzed by Marx, the disfranchisement and atomization. Because last time when you look at the pre-capitalist society, usually they live in a village and stuff and everybody knows each other. So when you have like, this is also sometimes related to the values of what we call as the Malaysia. If someone is getting married, the whole village comes together to help. And this is actually same across the whole world, tribalism and kind of stuff. Of course, today it is linked very much close to ethnicity because of the divide and rule policy. But as the progress into capitalistic society, people move far away, they become disfranchised. More people in urban area does not know their neighbors. Okay, and because of this lack of human connection, the lack of human organization, the lack of platforms, even when you look at resident association, it's quite heavily politicized. I mean, it's involved by certain partisan politics and they only appoint their own people. So people does not feel it does not represent where do I want to go. Okay, and all of this has actually indirectly locked people out. They felt like, I mean, it's useless. If they don't speak for me, what's the point of me going there? It's just bickering. People there are there for money, this and that. I just raise my kids. I just pay my electricity bill. Things will be fine as long as they don't disturb me and stuff. But this is actually had strengthened what you also say in a way prevents a degree of competition for the politicians. Because now, when you want a change in a society, you say you must actually go and lobby to your MPs and get a buy-in. And if you follow a proper democracy, if I want to change, why the hell do I supposed to be lobbying? I will become my own MP myself.
Okay? Right.
And this was actually an argument between me and my father, because he was saying, I mean, if you don't like Malaysia, you go to other countries. You are educated, you quite well, you can speak English, the whole world is open for you. Then I was like, yeah, but why can't I change my own country? Why do I have to run away and stuff?
Right.
So, and this is actually true for a lot of nations who can correlate with their parents, tell them, if you don't like Malaysia, go. Okay, but they do not say go into politics. They say go away from Malaysia. And I am saying, why cannot I go to politics? And then say, no, it's not for you. It's only for certain people. And I said, but that's democracy, right? So, of course, my father could not understand. He got locked into that argument. He didn't know. But either way, he was very much against me of joining politics in any manner. Okay, he felt politics is so dirty and stuff. But then again, this also gave the opportunity to the old power to cling on to power. Okay, because they had minimal competition. And any competition within their own party is suppressed through patronage or they play ethnicity. When you look in Barisan, they say that, oh, only UMNO can control this ministry, can do this and that. Okay, so all of this locked out a lot of competition. And this atomization or being apolitical, I don't like politics, okay, has actually given the biggest upper hand to all the old power. So when you say that I do not contribute to the political mess, everybody who stay out of politics contribute to the mess. Okay, as long as you stay out of politics, you created vacuum for the bad people. And now it's full of dirt. And when your house is actually dirty, you don't run away from your house. You roll up your sleeve and you clean your house. That's what you need to do. And this is same for our politics. This is our society. This is our place. This is our land. where they may have different language, mother tongue, racial, ethnicity, doesn't matter. But it's our problem. If you look at Hartal doctor, it doesn't matter you're Malay, Chinese, Indian, Sabah, Sarawak, Iban. As long as you're a young contract doctor, you're screwed. So they got together and they fought. And they actually are triggering change to a certain extent, you know. They have turned attention of the people in Putrajaya to look at them, right? So when you get together, you can make change. You get together, you can make change. But the more you stay out, the more you're going to lose out.
You know, you touched on this idea of, mobilizing, organizing as an important part of democracy. But how do we change the mindset as a whole, right? How do we bridge the gap between the people and the powers that be? You're from Parti Socialist Malaysia. Socialist is in the name. So as, you know, as someone who advocates socialism, what would you suggest, especially in these trying times of political turbulence?
PSM argues that change does not only happen in Pilihan Raya, it can happen through Jalan Raya. Okay. And time to time, we have actually proved it successful. Not many people know that the Minimum Wage Act was actually pushed by PSM, and we did not have very strong political power at that point of time. We only had one MP at that time, which is Dr. Michael J. Kumar from Sungai Siput. Okay? But we mobilized the people, we mobilized the workers, we mobilized the bottom of the society who were highly depressed, who are working hard, and they were hardworking people. Some of them work actually up to 12 hours, but they only paid about a few hundreds, and they could not make their ends meet, you know. When you look at the children, they were malnutrition and stuff. And then we decided minimum wage has to go in. So we had a lot of consultations, roundtables, working with them. And some of these communities are not really English or Malay-speaking communities, so we have to speak to them in Mandarin, in Tamil. So we tried a lot of methods to bring people from different cultures together, but they were a similar social fabric. They were the bottom of the society, informal working sector, who was actually subsidizing our society to low wages. Yeah, and we fought for minimum wage hard, and we actually rallied. There was a lot of protests pulled in front of the parliament. There's a lot of memorandum. There was a lot of education, empowerment, and eventually the Barisan Nasional had no choice, and they came in and they decided to implement the minimum wage. And then you had the Minimum Wage Act. And today, minimum wage has been revised along to meet into inflation. Of course, there has been instance where Mahathir refused to increase, and then he insulted the entire workers by just increasing 50 ringgit. I mean, that was a total insult. But the workers actually still mobilize and saying that, you know, 50 ringgit increment is actually an insult. You don't insult our labor, right? So this actually had showed that how the democracy actually can be pushed forward in event the Pilihan Raya does not justify for you, okay? And there is a lot of things that has been shown in Malaysia through demonstration. And I can see the need for them to actually have the demonstration, because the Pilihan Raya is not working for them. It's not reflecting them. I would like to take an example from the Lawan protests. Okay, The young people actually started a silent revolution, a revolution against divide and rule. The 50 years of racial division, racial hegemony propagated by UMNO Barisan Nasional, strengthened by Mahathir. You know, from a very young age, we are told to fill up the Malay, Chinese, Indian column. You know, I actually went to the blood bank, they need to give blood, and they were asking, are you Malay, Chinese, Indian? I was like, I want to give you blood, man. I was saying, why you did it? But this is all the small, small things you do to reinforce your race.
Yes.
But Hartal Lawan was amazing. When you look at people from different ethnicity, you had liberal, you had the socialist, you had the theology people, you had the Muslims, you had the Chinese, everybody were there. So when you look this year, when you had so many series of protests, where they talk about Buka Parliament, Undi 18, they actually gave up racism instantly overnight. Okay, which is an amazing thing to do. So they had started a side, unknowing to them, unconsciously, they had actually started a siren revolution against ethnicity, which have been dividing us so long. And this is actually threatening people in power. Okay, and history will shows us that any form of non-ethnic fight, any class fight, always ends in a success if it's only done consistently. So which is why I think the people in establishment, Putrajaya or Bersatu for that matter, are clamping down so hard on the youngsters, because they have took up the last weapon of democracy they had, which is public protest, mass assembly. So, and that taking up together outside the ethnicity divide which they had propagated is actually threatening them. Okay? So when you look at this, this is actually becoming very successful. And demonstration is a form of democracy. It is direct democracy, and people should not go around discouraging them. Instead, you got a problem, take up democracy. And PSM time to time we have actually shown it work. Because before we do any protest, we write a letter to the ministers, we try to chase him, ikut the saluran betul, you see. So we will try to do that until the people that we are helping itself get so frustrated. I say, okay, let's do a public protest. So they themselves are the one who call it because they find all the saluran betul does not work for the commoners.
But how do we change the mindset of the liberal middle class people to be more actively engaged in politics?
I have a friend, his name is Pandey Selvam. I had a phone call with him 2 weeks last, okay? And one thing both of us agreed, he's actually about three times my age. He's an old-time democratic human rights activist and labor organizer kind of thing. So he and I, although we are from generations apart, we had one agreement. A lot of these middle-class, liberal people will actually self-organize themselves when they are perio nasi kena dibuang pasir. So we said when you're because now they are very comfortable in the economic circle and everything.
Right.
So they are really does not have any reason for them to actually move forward. But COVID has actually threatened them as much as everybody else. Okay, and this is not only COVID. Actually, COVID has accelerated the entire economic inequality which they themselves were facing. Because last time when you look in 95, when the hospital cleaners were being outsourced, they were put into contract workers, the doctors never say anything. Okay, and 20 years later, now the doctors are on the contract. So when you actually stay away and seeing your neighbors or your people getting hit and you never do anything about it, it's actually very bad because eventually they'll come for you. Mm-hmm. And this is one thing that actually happened. And when you look at these liberal middle class people and stuff, who all this while were a bit more comfortable in their bubble, we call it a certain extent bubble, right, have also now been formally hurt and they are coming forward. And one thing the entire human history have told us, never underestimate the ability for people to organize under immense economic and social pressure. One of it, when you look at these things like Lawan protests, where people just self-organized into a rally, and they were not really pushed by political party. Common people who are very frustrated with how the society is moving, and they were worried for everybody. And they got together and they pushed it. It is actually a non-partisan movement. Which is why you look at them, they say we want Muhyiddin to get down, but they never specify who becomes the next prime minister.
That's
but
right.
They have also issued a clear warning. Anybody after Muhyiddin does the same, we will get rid of you also. So this is where we are seeing. And this group of people, time to time, have avoided politics. They come from the very liberal kind of middle-income people who are quite comfortable and stuff. And now they are coming forward to talk about the entire society. So yes, this disfranchisement, this comfortable economic condition has made them not to get involved, but we also should not. We also should recognize the fact that human history have shown that these people can organize themselves faster under the right conditions. So when the right condition exists, which is existing now, all right, and can actually throw all this old power out of power itself.
All right, Sharon. You know, as we wrap up this conversation, final thoughts on bridging the gap between people and parliament, between people and the state, between people and politicians.
One thing that the people really need to do now is do not throw your weight onto a handful of member of parliament which never represented you at the first place, okay? And you have to start throwing your belief onto yourself. Put the confidence in yourself. Put the confidence in yourself and start thinking about how do we want to get the next people, your neighbors, your friends, the guys in your WhatsApp group, to come forward, to organize them and to actually to seize the political power. When I meant seizing the political power, it's democratizing the political power, which is centralized to a handful of individuals, largely towards the prime minister and to a handful of the cabinet members and so on. So you need to think about coming forward, making that political change. They are not going to give up that power. That is clear. They are not going to give up that power, and neither they going to give up that system, which is heavily rigged to protect themselves. Everybody who come say that we will reform, never actually did any of the reform, and all the reform was actually pushed down their throat, and they are giving us half-baked reform. So as a people, what you can do to bridge the gap between parliament or for political power and the people for that matter is that you need to fight to democratize the power. It is not going to be handed to you on a silver plate. Okay, entire human history, democracy was fought. You know, it was fought hard and was given and it was enjoyed by the successors and so on. Yes, we might not enjoy the fruit of the tree we plant today, but at least that tree will give shade and fruit to the people in the coming generation. And that's a legacy we should think about it. And there's no better time in Malaysia to actually fight for our democracy rights. Every time is a good time.
On that note, Sharon, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
I've been speaking with Sharon Raj of Parti Socialist Malaysia about how we can bridge the gap between the rakyat and the political powers that be. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.